I guess hell must look something like that, said a voice. McMurdo turned and saw that one of the policemen had shifted in his seat and was staring out into the fiery waste. For that matter, said the other policeman, I allow that hell must be something like that. If there are worse devils down yonder than some we could name, it's more than I'd expect. I guess you're new to this part, young man? Well, what if I am? McMurdo answered in a surly voice. Just this, mister, that I should advise you to be careful in choosing your friends. I don't think I'd begin with Mike Scanlon or his gang if I were you. What the hell is it to you who are my friends? Roared McMurdo in a voice which brought every head in the carriage round to witness the altercation. Did I ask you for your advice, or did you think me such a sucker that I couldn't move without it? You speak when you're spoken to, and by the Lord, you'd have to wait a long time if it was me. He thrust out his face and grinned at the patrolman like a snarling dog. The two policemen, heavy, good-natured men, were taken aback by the extraordinary vehemence with which their friendly advances had been rejected. No offence, stranger, said one. It was a warning for your own good, seeing that you are, by your own showing, new to the place. I'm new to the place, but I'm not new to you and your kind, cried McMurdo in cold fury. I guess you're the same in all places, shoving your advice in when nobody asks for it. Maybe we'll see more of you before very long, said one of the patrolmen with a grin. You're a real hand-picked one, if I'm a judge. I was thinking the same, remarked the other. I guess we may meet again. I'm not afraid of you, and don't you think it, cried McMurdo. My name's Jack McMurdo, see? If you want me, you'll find me at Jacob Shafter's on Sheridan Street, Vermissa. So, I'm not hiding from you, am I? Day or night, I dare to look the like of you in the face. Don't make any mistake about that. There was a murmur of sympathy and admiration from the miners at the dauntless demeanour of the newcomer, while the two policemen shrugged their shoulders and renewed a conversation between themselves. A few minutes later, the train ran into the ill-lit station, and there was a general clearing, for Vermissa was by far the largest town on the line. McMurdo picked up his leather gripsack and was about to start off into the darkness when one of the miners accosted him. "By gar, mate, you know how to speak to the cops," he said in a voice of awe. "It was grand to hear you. Let me carry your grip and show you the road. I'm passing Shafter's on the way to my own shack." There was a chorus of friendly "good night" from the other miners as they passed from the platform. Before even he had set foot in it, McMurdo, the turbulent, had become a character in Vermissa. The country had been a place of terror, but the town was in its way even more depressing. Down that long valley there was at least a certain gloomy grandeur in the huge fires and the clouds of drifting smoke, while the strength and industry of man found fitting monuments in the hills which he had spilled by the side of his monstrous excavations. But the town showed a dead level of mean ugliness and squalor. The broad street was churned up by the traffic into a horrible rutted paste of muddy snow. The sidewalks were narrow and uneven. The numerous gas lamps served only to show more clearly a long line of wooden houses, each with its veranda facing the street, unkempt and dirty. As they approached the centre of the town, the scene was brightened by a row of well-lit stores, and even more by a cluster of saloons and gaming houses, in which the miners spent their hard-earned but generous wages. "That's the Union House," said the guide, pointing to one saloon which rose almost to the dignity of being a hotel. "Jack McGinty is the boss there." "What sort of a man is he?" McMurdo asked. "What? Have you never heard of the boss?" "How could I have heard of him when you know that I am a stranger in these parts?" "Well, I thought his name was known clear across the country. It's been in the papers often enough."
"What for?"
"Well," the miner lowered his voice,
"over the affairs."
"What affairs?"
"Good Lord, mister, you are queer, if I must say it without offence. There's only one set of affairs that you'll hear of in these parts, and that's the affairs of the Scourers."
"Why, I seem to have read of the Scourers in Chicago. A gang of murderers, are they not?"
"Hush, on your life," cried the miner,
standing still in alarm and gazing in amazement at his companion.
"Man, you won't live long in this part if you speak in the open street like that. Many a man had had the life beaten out of him for less."
"Well, I know nothing about them. It's only what I have read. "'And I'm not saying that you have not read the truth.' "'The man looked nervously round him as he spoke, "'peering into the shadows as if he feared to see some lurking danger. "'If killing is murder, then God knows there is murder and despair. "'But don't you dare to breathe the name of Jack McGinty in connection with it, stranger, "'for every whisper gets back to him, "'and he's not one that is likely to let it pass. "'Now, that's the house you are after, that one, standing back from the street.' You'll find old Jacob Shafter that runs it as honest a man as lives in this township. I thank you, said McMurdo, and shaking hands with this new acquaintance, he plodded, gripsack in hand, up the path which led to the dwelling house, at the door of which he gave a resounding knock. It was opened at once by someone very different from what he had expected. It was a woman, young and singularly beautiful. She was of the German type, blonde and fair-haired, with the piquant contrast of a pair of beautiful dark eyes with which she surveyed the stranger with surprise and a pleasing embarrassment which brought a wave of colour over her pale face. Framed in the bright light of the open doorway, it seemed to McMurdo that he had never seen a more beautiful picture. The more attractive for its contrast with the sordid and gloomy surroundings, a lovely violet growing upon one of those black slag heaps of the mines would not have seemed more surprising. So entranced was he that he stood staring without a word, and it was she who broke the silence.
"'I thought it was father,' said she, with a pleasing little touch of a German accent. "'Did you come to see him? He is downtown. I expect him back every minute.'
McMurdo continued to gaze at her in open admiration until her eyes dropped in confusion before this masterful visitor. "'No, miss,' he said at last. "'I'm in no hurry to see him, but your house was recommended to me for board. I thought it might suit me, and now I know it will.'
"'You are quick to make up your mind,' said she with a smile.
"'Anyone but a blind man could do as much,' the other answered. She laughed at the compliment.
"'Come right in, sir,' she said. "'I'm Miss Etty Shafter, Mr. Shafter's daughter. "'My mother's dead, and I run the house. "'You can sit down by the stove in the front room until father comes along. "'Ah, here he is. "'So you can fix things with him right away.'
"'A heavy, elderly man came plodding up the path. "'In a few words, McMurdo explained his business. "'A man of the name of Murphy had given him the address in Chicago. "'He, in turn, had had it from someone else. "'Old Shafter was quite ready.' The stranger made no bones about terms, agreed at once to every condition, and was apparently fairly flush of money. For $7 a week paid in advance, he was to have board and lodging. So it was that McMurdo, the self-confessed fugitive from justice, took up his abode under the roof of the Shafters, the first step which was to lead to so long and dark a train of events ending in a far distant land.